Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from Radio's Yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. True history coming up in this hour. Later on, a true story on the Cavalcade of America. But right now, it's Eyes Aloft, a program dedicated to the Aircraft Warning Service on the West Coast during the Second World War. This NBC broadcast first heard on August 24th, 1942.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Eyes Aloft.
Army Flash. One, multi-motor, high, scene, 15, Lucy, 4, overhead, southeast.
Eyes aloft, watching the sky, watching for planes flying the lanes up above. Eyes aloft.
Eyes aloft. The 4th Fighter Command of the United States Army Air Forces, in cooperation with the West Coast radio stations, presents this new series of Monday evening programs honoring the 150,000 volunteer observers and filter center workers whose round-the-clock vigilance keeps watchful guard of the Pacific coast against attack by enemy planes.
Eyes aloft, night and day, we'll help protect the USA.
Ken Carpenter speaking. Tonight we bring you a gala second edition of Eyes Aloft. You'll hear the weekly presentation of the handsome Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award. Dramatized true stories about observation posts and filter centers. And you'll hear from one of the 4th Fighter Command's most famous observers, motion picture star Henry Fonda. Here now, your Eyes Aloft narrator, the well-known radio, motion picture, and newsreel commentator, Gayne Whitman.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Do you like mystery yarns? Well, our first true story tonight comes from the state of Washington. We have titled it The Strange Case of the Capitol Dome. The gray granite dome of the Capitol building in Olympia, Washington, rises 280 feet above the grounds below. Within the crown of the dome is a stone-pillared cupola. The cupola is open to the weather. In winter, icy gales drive constantly about the tower of this monument to government. Inside of the dark dome and leading up to the cupola is a winding spiral staircase of steel. On last January 13th, a man and a woman, bundled in heavy clothing, laboriously climbed the spiral steps.
176.
177. Achoo!
Mildred, you're catching cold.
Go on, Phil. Go on. We're nearly at the top.
178. 179. 180.
Phil, you sneezed then.
No, I didn't. Something just tickled my nose.
Of all the places to have a lookout post. Well, go on.
I gotta rest a second. Now, the country is one thing and the army is another. But people won't keep on coming up here in the top of this dome to catch their death of pneumonia.
Well, somebody has to keep these watches. Go on, we're right here at the top almost.
181. 182. Well, here we are at the top.
Open the door.
Yeah. Step out, Mildred.
Yeah.
Come on. People on duty up here can't even hear us on account of the wind.
Well, I'm sick of this whole useless thing. What do we do up here? Telephone to somebody about a lot of silly planes flying around in the skies.
Mildred.
Oh, I didn't mean that. But if a few more people would only help keep the watches.
Yeah. Too few are doing too much.
Well, don't try to take bows for what we're doing, Phil.
Gosh, it's cold up here. Mm-hmm. Oh, there they are. Come on. Well, we got here.
You're about 5 minutes early.
Why, it's windy, isn't it, Mr. Hedberg?
Yeah, good thing there's a railing. We'd get blown off. How are you tonight, Mrs. Travers?
I'll tell you one thing, Mr. Hedberg. Excuse me. I know some women can't climb those 182 steps up here, and some shouldn't be trying it. You've got to move this observation post, or it's going to fail.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're right.
Carl Hedberg, service manager for Talcott Brothers, oldest jewelry store in the state of Washington, is the chief observer in Olympia. He knew after 60 days that the post was failing. would fail completely if it weren't moved from the Capitol Dome. On the 1st of February, Carl Hedberg started promoting. He went to Thad Pierce, manager of one of Olympia's leading hotels.
Thad, your hotel here is 6 stories high. There's a good view from your roof.
Sure. What are you getting at, Carl?
I want to build a little observation shack up on your roof.
Oh. Well, you see, Carl...
Thad, I want to start construction right away. It's for the protection of the community, you know.
I know, but I'm afraid my insurance rate would jump if I opened my roof to traffic.
You want to check on that point, Thad?
Well, sure I will, right away.
And if the rate doesn't increase, can we build our observation post up there?
Why, certainly. Only too glad to cooperate. Certainly.
Good. Say, if you're that willing to cooperate, Thad, I might give you the honor of taking over a regular observer's watch.
Next, Carl Hedberg called on the Nyack Lumber Company and the Washington Veneer Company, presented his problem. Those two companies willingly donated the lumber for the little shack. The Carpenters Union agreed to supply free labor to build it. But one obstacle remained. The lumber had to be raised to the roof of the hotel. Carl Hedberg presented this problem to one of his most reliable and cooperative observers, local police judge Ray Ostrander.
Well, why don't we do it ourselves, Carl?
Well, I guess that's one way to get it done.
You know anything about hauling lumber up to the top of a 6-story hotel roof?
Oh, gosh, no, Ray. I'm a jeweler.
Mm-hmm. Well, guess first we need some ropes, you know, block and tackle.
Uh-huh. I wonder where I can go to borrow stuff like that.
I'll get it somewhere. You've been putting in enough of your time on this job without any too much help either.
How about borrowing our block and tackle from Western Heating Company?
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Haskett's the city commissioner. He can't very well turn us down on a deal like ours.
Yeah. Say, when will we do this lumber hoisting job, Carl?
How about tonight? This is Saturday. Going anyplace, Ray?
No, nowhere I can't cancel. This is important.
I can meet you in the alley back of the hotel at 9 tonight. How's that?
All right. Wear old clothes.
Sure. Say, suppose we need a city permit to do a job like that?
Well, let's do it. Find out later. I'll go and round up the tackle now.
Yeah, the lumber will be delivered this afternoon.
Well, see you tonight at 9 in the alley, Carl.
Okay, Ray. At 9.
Okay. Too bad we don't have a light to see what we're doing, huh?
Yeah, maybe it's a good thing. There'll be a lot of people come to ask questions. Say, I feel like a second story man.
You look like one. There. I think that load's tied together tight now.
Well, I hope so. I'll go on back up to the roof now, Ray. Say, this is kind of fun, isn't it, Ray?
Well, I've spent less entertaining Saturday nights. Go on, get up on the roof. We'll haul our first load up.
Okay. Give me 5 minutes.
Righto.
Ready up there, Carl?
Let her come.
I'll haul. You handle the guidelines.
Here we go.
Yep. Here comes the first load.
Ray, you better take it easy for a minute.
I'm not tired.
I mean, I think there's something wrong with the load.
What's wrong with it?
I can't see. You think the lumber's loose or else? Hey, look out. The load's come loose.
What?
Come on, get out of the way. I
can't hear what you're saying. Huh? Yeah, I'm all right.
You didn't get hit?
No. Don't look now, but we just broke the back window to Kepner's Floral Company. Hey, somebody's coming.
Hey, what's going on down this alley?
What's it to you?
Oh, Robert, breaking windows, huh? Oh, what's going on down there, right?
We've been apprehended. Shall I stay here and let the police take me, or shall I run and hide?
Hiding somebody,
officer. Here they come.
All right, buddy, we got you.
Okay, you got me. What are you going to do with me?
They're breaking out alley store windows, are you?
Looks like it.
What's going on down there?
Oh, no,
it's police.
They aren't senators, Ray.
Sergeant, he's got an accomplice up on the roof of the hotel.
Hey, what kind of a job are you guys trying to pull? And quit laughing.
I can't. I'm too embarrassed. I feel like a schoolboy caught in the jam.
Come on. Let's get over to the station. You can tell the judge all about it.
You mind if I call to Jimmy Valentine up there on the roof?
Well, hurry it up.
Hey, Carl.
Yeah.
Drop over to the police station later and see how you like me behind bars.
Now, you boys, wait for me. I'll be right
back. Hey, wait a minute. Have you got a flashlight, Sergeant?
I just went out and got it out of the car.
Give it here a minute.
Yeah, sure, here.
Turn this thing on and see what this man looks like. There.
Hey. Hello, officer.
Judge Ostrander.
Nice night for a murder, eh, boys?
Well, but, what are you doing back here in this dark alley? What's all this pile of lumber and junk?
Well, boys, Carl Hedberg and I are just trying to do a little something for the community, and so far we've kind of messed it up. Oh, we'll pay for the broken window. Now, look, officers, I think I can explain everything. Let's just keep this one off the record, shall we?
Hmm? Yeah. Yeah.
Through the efforts of Chief Observer Carl Hedberg, Ray Ostrander, and a few others like him, the observation post was built atop the hotel. It is accessible and comfortable. 115 observers report regularly as three captains, Ray Ostrander, Ernest Miner, and Harland Graver, keep the crews flowing evenly. But had the post been left in the dome of the Capitol building, it no doubt would have been destined to utter failure. Tonight, we pay tribute to Carl Hedberg for being a wise and energetic chief observer. We salute all who have made Observation Post Olympia 57 an outstanding success. Situated in the geographical center of the Pacific Coast area in Coos County, Oregon, is the tiny little town of McKinley. We feel that there's something about McKinley Post and the people of McKinley community that is typical of the spirit of the Ground Observer Corps. A gravel road winds through a beautiful and tight little mountain valley. In a forest-clad hollow, little more than half a mile wide, is McKinley. The post is a little frame building standing beneath a large old cherry tree. John O'Sullivan is chief observer. There in the heart of the little community today stands a typical observation post, carrying on 24 hours a day, though very few planes are ever reported. On April 30th, someone brought a notebook and left it at the post. The book became the Diary of the Watchers. The things that are written in it are beautiful, sincere, inspiring, truly patriotic. Each week, we will read some brief entry made by a McKinley Post observer in this diary. Let's see. This is the way the little book begins.
An off-the-record diary of McKinley Observation Post, beginning April 30th, 1942, and ending who knows when. Darn those Japs. Page one. A very sad beginning to our diary. Just heard that one of our most faithful observers lost two fingers in a mill accident. Our sympathy to you, Howard Koch.
We turn to another entry a few days later.
I am so glad to be a member of this little post and thank everyone for their kindness during our misfortune. Howard is doing nicely now. I am watching from 9 p.m. until 3 a.m. Hope the Japs don't come tonight. Lucille Koch.
And one more entry. Monday, May 11th, 1942.
At 11 p.m., my son Forrest woke me and got into bed. As I got up, I called his attention to the strange light in the north and northeast. The Aurora Borealis. At 11:30, the electric power failed. I wrapped myself in a blanket and prepared for a night in the dark. The light in the north increased. At midnight, I easily could see the clock hands when I turned the face of the clock toward the east window. A cold electric heater reflected a spot of light. The star Vega in Lyra seemed to twinkle faster than I ever noticed before. At 12:26, the electric light came on, and the heater soon warmed my feet. I returned to reading the adventures of the Albee family in Yukon, as described in the May National Geographic magazine. At 1 a.m., the sky became cloudy, stars being obscured. Now, 4 a.m., a gentle rain on the roof. Here is a little poem I've written while sitting here tonight. When once more the dove of peace shall quiet the thundering guns of death, and we hear the songs of gladness pouring out in every breath, he will gain much satisfaction from belonging to the hosts of courageous men and women at our observation posts. Signed, T.S. Easton.
Now, here is Ken Carpenter to chat for a few minutes with one of the most famous observers in the Aircraft Warning Service. Star of the screen and observer at Brentwood, California Post, Henry Fonda.
Well, Hank, how do you find time to make all the pictures you do and still serve as an observer?
Well, how does a farmer find time to do all his work and still serve as an observer, Ken?
Well, I see what you mean. You know, I think more people should be contributing their services to this fine volunteer civilian work.
Yes. Too few are doing too much. Of course, I think maybe a lot of people don't know about the Ground Observer Corps.
Well, it's about time some of them find out and offer to share the work.
I think it's an American privilege to be a ground observer, Ken.
When did you start?
Oh, sometime the latter part of last December.
You've been at it almost from the beginning, then.
I remember I started on Christmas Eve.
Oh, and I suppose you missed having Christmas tree with your family.
No, this year we postponed our tree till Christmas morning so I could handle my watch. You know, Ken, they nailed me to handle a New Year's Eve shift, too.
They really give you the big holidays, don't they?
It's okay with me. I'm not a nightclub boy. The Fondas always watch the old year outright in their own home.
Only this year, you were at the OP. Say, about how many planes a month does your Brentwood Post report?
Well, I don't know how many a month, but during the day, when the women are on watch, they report as many as 100 an hour.
100 an hour? Man, they must keep those lines at the filter center hot.
Of course, I usually take the night shift. Midnight to 4 a.m. I'm sort of like some of the folks up in Northern California. Back in the hills, I don't get to report many planes.
Well, do you know about how many you have reported in the 7 or 8 months you've been on the job?
Yeah, about four. But an Army officer once told me it's just as important to the system to turn in no reports as to turn in any.
How do you mean?
Well, I mean what counts is having somebody there on duty to make a report if a plane is sighted.
Well, gosh, Henry, if you serve from midnight to 4 a.m. and picture people have to be on the set at 5 or 6 in the morning, you don't get much sleep the night you watch.
No. No, I usually just stop by home, have a cup of coffee, and then get right out to the studio.
Just one more thing before we wind this up, Hank. What do you think most important to the operation of a successful post?
Most important?
I mean, what pitfalls should observers watch for in this work?
Well, there's one thing that really burns me up.
Well, what's that?
The observer who won't take the trouble to learn how to call in a concise, accurate report of a plane.
Are there different ways to call in a report?
Certainly, a right and a wrong way. And if an observer calls in a garbled report, it sure confuses the poor girls on the filter boards. A report should be called in exactly according to the Army form. It's very important those reports are made right.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps a word of the wise is sufficient. Say, you're really all steamed up about this Ground Observer Corps work, aren't you, Hank?
Well, I think it's one of the most useful and vital volunteer jobs any civilian can do these days. I've been hounding my chief observer, Charlie Dye, to give me more shifts. That's the way I feel about it.
Well, thank you, Henry Fonda, for coming to our program today.
It was a pleasure, Ken. And remember, folks, eyes aloft.
Our last true life story today comes from the little community of Roosevelt, California, on the edge of the Mojave Desert. The Roosevelt Post has had a colorful career, but one with plenty of headaches and heartaches. And for all its trouble, it has maintained a high efficiency rating of nearly 99%. At first, the post was located in George and Billy Zazana's service station at the Roosevelt Crossroads. But after a few months, a change had to be made. The Zazanas talked it over with Chief Observer John Holdren and Ralph Austin and Alvis Williams one evening.
We can't go on leaving our little service station open night and day, John.
Well, I don't blame you, George.
You see, our place is getting to be a 24-hour-a-day hangout. Transients coming through at night see the only light in town and they hang around here.
Well, I think we ought to build a little shack right across the street.
On the corner.
You know, good idea come to me this afternoon.
What's that, Ralph?
Well, I knew we was going to have to move the post out of your service station here. So I got me the idea that maybe we could get an old sedan auto body and make it into a post.
Hey, that's not a bad idea, Ralph. You mean just take the wheels off and set her up on blocks over there on the corner?
This auto body I got in mind don't have any wheels on it.
Well, whose car is it?
Well, I went into Lancaster and I did a little chiseling this afternoon.
Yeah, what kind of chiseling?
I went to Clark's junkyard, and I told him what we needed and what it was for. Clark said if we'd come and get it, we could have an old Model A Ford sedan body he's got laying there.
Hey, well, good for you, Ralph.
Of course, it's a rusty old job.
Well, I got a spray gun. I'll get some paint, and we'll paint it up pretty. Billy, what's your favorite color?
Well, you know me, Elvis. I like green.
Okay, we'll paint it green.
You know, I figure we can rip out the front seat and build a shelf for the phone. You know, people can sit comfortable in the back seat just like they were going somewhere.
You know, George, I think we should have them hook the post telephone right in our line here at the service station.
You mean when it rings in the post, it'll ring here, too?
Sure. And if for some reason somebody can't show up for a shift, I can take the call here. Help out all we can to keep this thing running smooth for the Army.
That's right. Good idea.
The donated sedan body was mounted on a foundation there at the corner of the Roosevelt Crossroads. The body was painted a bright green. Telephone, lights, heater, magazines were installed. It was perhaps one of the most novel posts on the Pacific coast. And then, an incident happened that aroused the sympathy of the entire community. Henry Nosick, one of the observers, has had a ranch near Roosevelt for years, has reared his family in the community. Henry Nosick was born in Russia some 50 years ago. One night, when Henry Nosick was on duty, a plane flew over, and Henry tried to report it.
I got to report. I got to report. Now, how do I do? I ring the telephone ground handle. Yeah. I wait.
Army, go ahead, please.
Yeah, now I say, Army, flash. One aeroplane?
You'll have to speak more plainly, please.
I say, one aeroplane overhead flying?
I'm sorry, sir. I can't understand you.
Oh, I am Russian. I talk the best I can. I try again. You listen good. One single motor, low, shin.
What?
Shin. I see it. It is so low.
Is there anyone else there who can place the report?
I go cross street, get girl over there, call goodbye. I am sorry. Do I talk so bad people can't understand me? I go over, see Billy cross the street.
One. Single motor. Low. Scene. 36 Ralph. Northwest.
Oh, there you are, Mr. Nosick.
They don't understand me on the phone. What will I do, Billy?
Well, when you call, talk slowly, Mr. Nosick. Speak as clearly as you can.
I do all that. That girl at that filter center, maybe she don't hear so good.
Now, Mr. Nosick, we have no idea how busy they are. Well, they're taking hundreds of calls an hour. They're on the edge. They have so much responsibility. They have a nerve-wracking job to do.
Some people don't have patience with foreigners.
You aren't a foreigner, Mr. Nosick. You're an American.
Ah, sure. I am American. I have my citizenship papers long time, but I can't help. I speak with a Russian accent, but I can't help even if I try so hard.
Now, you mustn't worry. You go on back to your post and watch for planes. Next time you call in a report, speak just as distinctly as you can.
All right. I try again, Billy. This job I want to do for my country so much. I want to help like other people in town here.
2 weeks later, and after Mr. Nosick had served several other watches, a request came from Filter Center that Mr. Nosick be relieved of his job as a watcher. When Mr. Nosick was told by the chief observer, he was stunned. He went back and talked to his friend, Billy Zarzana.
They don't want me, Billy.
I heard this morning. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Listen to me talk, Billy. Can you understand me? Now you listen. I speak for you. Army flash, one, multimotor, high. You understand me, Billy?
Yes, Mr. Nosick, but maybe over our poor telephone, it isn't easy for some people to hear real well.
I want to be observer, Billy.
Oh, I know, Mr. Nosick.
Timmy, my wife, she go out and work in hayfield like man the days I come to be observer. You know my boy Alex? Isn't he in American Army for 2 years?
Yes, Mr. Nosick. Now, don't get upset, please.
My younger boy, Stanley, he says he's going to enlist soon now. He's 21. Everybody do something to help, but but they won't let me.
Wait, Mr. Nosik. I think maybe you can help.
I can? How, Billy? Tell me how.
We'll work it out together.
Together?
Yes. I'll arrange in the future so that when you're on watch, I'll always be here at the service station.
Yeah?
When you see a plane, you just run over and let me know. I'll call in and make the report for you.
You will make a report for me? Oh, Billy, Billy, you are a wonderful girl. I watch, I tell you, then you call in and make my phone call nice and plain. That way, I help, I do my part. I be real American. Real American. Da, I be observer too. Observer.
Obstacles such as these, and more than we can tell you about, have constantly befallen Roosevelt Post. Still, the diligent little community has met and conquered each barrier. It is doing its noble part to help warn the nation of the possible approach of the enemy by air.
Each week, in cooperation with the Army Air Corps 4th Fighter Command, we present the beautiful Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to some observation post or filter center for outstanding service performed.
Here in our Hollywood studios, Captain Russell Z. Smith, Ground Observation Officer of the Southern California region, will now make the award. Captain Smith.
This week, we present the National Broadcasting Company's Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award to the Roosevelt, California Post for keeping that post in operation day and night as an integral unit of our national defense.
At the conclusion of this broadcast, the Eyes Aloft Gold Trophy Award will be rushed from this studio by Army Messenger to the community of Roosevelt, California. The handsome award will stand in the little green sedan post at the crossroads to remind all who have served that America will win. Gayne Whitman bidding the 150,000 aircraft warning service workers good night.
Eyes Aloft, on Tuned to Yesterday from August 24th, 1942, on NBC. It's an hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark LeVillier. And now a true story from the Second World War on the Cavalcade of America called The Major and the Mules, written by Milton Wayne. This first aired on the NBC Red Network on August 16th, 1943.
The Cavalcade of America, sponsored by DuPont, maker of better things for better living through chemistry, presents Warren William in The Major and the Mules. This evening, with Warren William as our star, Cavalcade brings you The Major and the Mules, a true story told tonight for the first time of the turning point in the battle for the Owen Stanley Mountains in New Guinea. Port Moresby, the hot, steaming little seacoast town on the southern shores of New Guinea that is the Allied base of operations against the Japs. At Army headquarters, a meeting is in session of the combined Australian and American general staff.
Well, so much for the basic strategy of tomorrow morning's attack, gentlemen. At this very moment, our bomber command is attacking the Jap supply lines and ammunition dumps. And by tonight, our little friends over there won't have enough ammunition left to stop a Boy Scout troop.
Got most of their depots spotted, eh?
Every last one of them. We've double-checked the positions on low-altitude photographs.
General, there's no chance of their bringing up more stuff, I suppose.
Not over those mountain trails, Colonel. Not unless they have a continuous transport system of some kind. And they haven't. Not since the native bearers deserted them.
Yes, I've flown over their supply lines myself. There's not a sign of land.
Good. Now, at dawn, the artillery will open up on their forward positions. At 0+45, our first wave will go over. Now, what was that?
I say.
That's artillery.
Answer that orderly, will you?
Yes, sir.
Now, as I was saying, gentlemen...
Staff headquarters. They're asking for you, General.
Oh? Excuse me, gentlemen.
Yes, of course.
Hello? Yes? They're what? Well, thank you. Well, gentlemen, the Jap artillery has opened up on us. Seems like they're beating us to the punch.
Yes. Got us pretty well spotted, too.
I'm sorry, gentlemen, but I'm afraid I'll have to ask you to step down into the shelter.
I suppose you're right.
This way, please, gentlemen. Right down these stairs.
Thank you.
Here's the door.
Boy, listen to that, will you?
Yes, pretty heavy.
No lack of ammunition there if they can afford to throw stuff around like that.
I'm afraid you're right. How will this affect our plans for the attack tomorrow, General?
Affect them? It'll cancel them. If they've still got that much ammunition, we'd better hold off for a while. Agreed, gentlemen?
Yes, I should
I
think
dare
so.
Dare say you're right, but where can they be getting it from?
Well, they're not supermen. There must be some explanation. If we don't find it pretty soon, it's going to be just too bad. We're holding them on the southern slopes, but that's about all. We've got our backs to the sea, and if they take Port Moresby, you can kiss all of northern Australia goodbye within a month. In other words, gentlemen, unless we lick this mystery of the Jack supply system, we're licked.
Well, frankly, I'm stumped. Trucks are out of the question over those jungle trails. They haven't had a plane in the sky for weeks.
Yes. Now, we know horses are no good for this terrain, and there aren't enough Jap troops in the whole South Pacific to carry the stuff on their backs.
Well, gentlemen, we've got to find the answer and find it quick.
General, are you sure aerial reconnaissance hasn't missed something?
Well, I was sure this morning, but they must have. Colonel.
Yes, sir.
Have reconnaissance go over the terrain again. Have them go over every inch of it until they find... Gentlemen, something just occurred to me about this.
Yes, what is it, General?
Well, I'm almost ashamed to mention it, but if I didn't know there just ain't no such animal out here, I'd say they must have a flock of good old Missouri mules.
Mules? Aye.
Well, where would they get them, General?
No, gentlemen, no. Of course not. It's just a crazy no-account hunch. We've got to find hard, solid facts.
What are you saying, Doc?
I check.
Harry?
By me.
Sorry, boys. $1.
Pop Palipka's got him again.
Why don't we just give him the money?
Can I have it if I get the cards?
Frankly, Major Palipka, I don't mind you getting most of the cards. I just mind you getting all of them.
Well, why don't you call me? Maybe I'm kidding.
Yeah. I tried that.
Hey, Sergeant! Hey, Tex.
Yes, sir.
Close that door, will you?
Yes, sir.
How do you expect a bunch of poor pilots to get any relaxation with all that noise going on?
I'm sorry, sir.
Only kidding, Tex. I wouldn't rag a guy from the old home state. Well, what are you guys saying?
It's all yours.
Take it. Not me. Thanks, fellas.
Your deal, friend.
Right.
What do you say we make this the last head?
What?
And you $40 ahead?
Why, Pop, how mercenary.
Yeah, what's your idea?
Oh, wait a minute. It's not that. I'm tired. No kidding.
You're tired? Of what? Raking in the dough?
Okay. I'll give you back the dough. I just want to sleep, that's all.
Yeah, for $2, I'd take him up on it. I could retire on what he's taken away from me in the last 6 weeks.
What's the matter, Pop? Not sleeping?
Not the last 3-4 nights.
Nerves?
I suppose. Oh, I keep hearing things.
What sort of things?
Well,
he probably hears the call of far-off Cuba Libres.
No, seriously, Pop.
That's a funny thing. I heard it the last 4 nights.
What?
Mules.
Now I will take my dough back.
You would take a guy from Texas for that one.
No, I'm not kidding, I do. I hear them all night long.
Go ahead, Doc. Tell him what Freud says it means when you dream about mules. Go ahead.
I don't dream about them. I hear them.
Oh, sure. You hear mules and I hear Carol Landis. That'll give you a rough idea of the difference between a guy from Texas and a guy from Brooklyn.
All right, wise guys. If you don't want to take a fellow officer's word.
Maybe
I better give you a couple of sleeping pills, Pop.
No, thanks. But it's funny. I know mules. I was brought up with mules.
I'll believe that.
Now, listen.
Be quiet, sir.
Yes, Sergeant?
I couldn't help but overhear in the conversation, sir.
So,
I hear him too, sir.
There!
Hey, just because you guys are from the same state.
Come on, Sergeant. Wait a minute. You say you hear mules too, Sergeant?
Yes, sir.
What did I tell you? There are mules. The sergeant's a smart cookie, even if he is a radio operator, eh, Tex?
Cut it out, Pop.
Yeah, how much of a cut has he given you, Sergeant?
Oh, it's true, sir. I've heard him for the last 3 or 4 nights.
Sure you have. You can't fool an old Texas farm boy about mules. When I hear mules, I hear mules. And when I hear one, I can tell whether he's from Texas or Missouri and how much he weighs and how old he is.
Sure, my grandmother had the same trouble.
You want to bet there's no mule?
Yeah, but, Pop, how could there be? We don't have any. The Japs couldn't have any because there are no mules in the Far East.
Let them bet. Even if the Japs did have any, you couldn't hear them this far away.
Listen, those guys are pushed so near our lines, by this time I can hear them breathe at night. And anyway, a mule's voice can carry for miles.
Yeah, so can a Polifka's.
But don't you half-wit see? This may be the answer to how the Japs are getting their supplies through the mountains.
Look, the Japs don't have mules. They never have had, and they never will have.
We may have sold them a little scrap by them, but we didn't sell them any mules.
Oh, it doesn't sound plausible, Pop, even from a scientific point of view. I don't think mules could even live in this climate.
Why not? I do, don't I?
He's got something there, Dr. Comparison is terrific.
All right. If you birds are so cocky, how about backing yourselves up with a little hard money?
I'll take you on. Yeah, but you have all my dough.
I'm practically clean.
Back on relief.
No, stop. You're wringing my heart. How much do you penny pinchers figure you drop?
Well, if you're asking me, $80.
You, Doc?
94 and some change.
Call it 95. Fred?
60. My poor old mother with payments to meet on a washing machine.
Yeah. 83, 95, and 60. Okay. If I lose, I'll pay over $238, and you can split it up. And if I win, it looks as though you work for me and Uncle Sam for the dual race.
Oh, boy, Mama's washing machine is safe.
Is it a deal?
Oh, and how?
Wait a minute. How are we going to prove anything?
Well, look, I'm flying reconnaissance in the morning, and brother, if there are mules, I'll find them.
You wouldn't cheat on an old buddy, would you, Fred?
Don't you worry, chum. If you're right, which you ain't, it sure'd be worth it to find mules.
It was a suck-up bet, Pop. Why don't you give up?
You vultures at least are going to wait till Freddy gets back, aren't you?
Yeah. Three more beers, please. Yes, sir.
I suppose I must be wrong, but it's funny. I heard him just as plain.
Did you hear him last night, Pop?
No. No, I didn't.
There, I told you it was a case for Freud. Once you talked and got it off your conscience, no more mules, see?
Hey, that's Freddy.
Here comes the payoff.
Freddy!
Over here. Fred, come on.
Chance Kings, you mind if I join you?
Don't be so cozy. What about the mules?
Well, Pop, I covered the whole territory. What do you think I saw?
Mules?
No, nothing.
Ah! Hey, fellas, come here. Pop Polifka rides again. This time to the cleaners.
Are you sure?
Oh, I couldn't have missed them if they'd been there, Pop. No kidding.
Nothing that looked like corrals or sheds?
No, not a thing.
Pop, come on, pay off.
Yeah, looks like he's right, Pop. What do you fellas say?
Well, I say certainly.
Okay. Here it is.
Well. Thank you very much.
Yes, do you want to count it?
Oh, no, that's all right, kid. We'll take your word on anything but mules.
Maybe you better give me a couple of those sleeping pills tonight, Doctor.
Yeah, well, drop around to see me tonight before you turn in.
Hey, wait a minute.
Now,
listen. To what?
Hey, Bob, choke that music box, will you?
He's crazy.
No, listen. Listen, quiet. Huh? Listen. Huh? Hear that?
Well, I'll be.
What did I tell you? That's a mule.
What do you mean, a mule?
I tell you, it is.
It did sound like
one. It could have been a hyena or something.
Yeah, it could have been anything.
Sure.
Could have been a parrot.
Sure.
Sure, it could have been an old man snoring.
Yeah, kid. Uh-oh.
As you were, gentlemen, as you were.
Sim.
Well, gentlemen, what's the discussion?
Well, we were just talking about noises, sir, like snoring.
It's more than that, sir. I think it's important, and I think the general ought to know about it.
Know about what?
The noises, sir. I mean, the mules. I mean,
mules? What the devil are you talking about?
But we heard them, sir. We all heard them just
heard
now.
Heard what? Mules?
Yes, sir.
Major Polifka, I hope this isn't a joke.
It's not, sir. I've heard them, and a sergeant's heard them. And just now, we all heard them.
Is this true, gentlemen?
Well, it could be anything, sir.
It certainly sounded like a mule, sir, but
But what?
General, I'm positive it's mules. Besides mules, some pack animal is the only way that Jap could possibly be getting his stuff over the Owen Stanleys.
Yeah, but how would they get any mules? Why hasn't reconnaissance seen them? A mule's a big animal. It needs shelter, corrals.
Well, I don't know the answers to all that, sir. Camouflage would account for some of it. The Jap's awful cute at that kind of stuff. But I'll bet you this whole roll of bills...
What roll?
Well, I mean, if you'll just let me fly over and take a look for myself...
Well, what makes you think you are particularly suited for a mule-finding mission, Major?
Well, sir, I just know mules, that's all.
Well, we've tried everything else. All right, go to it.
Yes, sir.
But if this is some kind of nonsense, Politka...
Yes, sir. That is, no, sir.
Report your findings to me tomorrow. Good night, gentlemen.
Good night.
Good night, sir.
If this is some kind of nonsense, Politka...
Boy, he meant it, too.
Well, Pop, what are you going to do now?
Hedge hop, look around, take pictures.
Hey, look, chum. Take it easy. You hedge hop through one of those canyons, your hedge hopping days are over.
You're not worried about me, are you, Freddy?
I mean it, Pop. The air currents in these narrow canyons are dynamite. Those little Japs aren't exactly asleep either. Now, I flew at 5,000 feet, and I came back looking like a sieve.
Just keep your shirts on, pals, and I'll bring you back some nice, pretty pictures. And, that reminds me.
Hey, give me back that dough.
Take it easy, you'll get it. If I don't get the pictures. So long, guys. See you at mess.
Well, how do you like that?
Here comes the Wonder Boy now.
How do you suppose he made out, huh?
Well, he got back anyway, which is almost more than I expected.
It looks like he got shot up a little, though. I told him.
Maybe we better go over and have a look.
All right.
Yeah.
Hey, Pop!
What'd you make out?
Boy, Harry, I didn't know you cared.
But you don't be silly. I just want to be sure you didn't have any holes through that wad of dough that we're going to collect.
That dough's plenty safe, pal. Don't worry.
Yeah? For who?
Any luck, Pop?
Just keep your pants on, gents. I'm making my report to the CG.
Major Politka from Texas, USA, is convinced that the ammunition with which the Japanese threaten the American position on New Guinea is carried across the mountains by mules. No one believes him, but he has bet his bankroll that he's right and has just returned from a reconnaissance flight with pictures which he hopes will prove it.
Aren't those pictures ready yet?
They're right out, sir.
Okay. Hey, Tex.
Hmm?
Did those guys try to punk you about any of the stuff I saw up there?
They asked me some questions, sir.
You didn't tell them anything, did you?
Major, I was as gabby as a lock-jawed barber with nobody to shave.
Good boy.
Here are your pictures, sir.
Oh, thanks. Huh. Nothing in this one. Well, this one. Ah, here's something.
Hmm?
Yeah. It might be. See that, Tex?
Yes, sir, it might be.
It must be. And I sure hope the old man agrees. Well, I'll take these right in and show them to him.
Come in.
Major Politka reporting, sir.
Come in, Politka, come in. Well, did you find your mules?
I think so, sir. Look here, on this picture. See that?
See what? I don't see anything that looks like a mule to me.
But those dark patches, sir, they're shelters of some kind. Camouflage corrals, it could be.
Could be. They could be anything.
But they must be, sir. Now, a few 820s might dig them out into the light.
Major, you know we haven't got bombs to waste on hypothetical targets.
But, General...
No, Politka. Do you have any idea how much time and money and effort it takes to get a bomb out of this hellhole of an island? Absolutely no.
But, General, my ship's just a reconnaissance plane. Why, a flying floozy doesn't even carry guns. All I'd like to do is take her and dive down on one of those things and kind of scare things up a little.
Well, what'll that prove?
I don't know, sir. Just a hunch.
Major Politka, I don't like to lose planes. I don't like to lose pilots. But I can't watch everything you do. And so if you want to hedge hop some patch of jungle swamp, I suppose I can't stop you.
Thank you, sir.
But if you crack up one of my ships and ever get back here to tell me about it, heaven help you.
Yes, sir. Thank you, sir.
We're in, Tex. We're in. Do you get it?
I think I do, sir.
You know mules, Tex?
Yes, sir.
Very sensitive animal, the mule, right?
Yes, sir.
So if those are corrals, and there are mules in them, and I can get down close enough to them and jazz the motors on flying flues,
they'll bust out of there and run like...
Right!
Joe Goat calling three goats. Joe Goat calling three goats. Over, over.
Three goats to Joe Goat. Three goats to Joe Goat. What's on your mind, Tex?
Getting there, Major.
In a second, though.
How's it look up there?
Maybe rough going, Sergeant. There it is, that dark patch I showed you. I'm over the canyon now.
Figured to have any trouble going down?
It's getting out that worries me. Just enough room to get old Floozy in. Maybe pull out again. You there, Joe Goat?
Yes, sir.
Any of my pals hanging around your shack?
Not yet, but I expect them any minute.
Keep them guessing, boy. Keep them guessing. The old camera's all set. I'm fixing to go.
Good luck, sir.
Thanks, Joe Goat. Stick around. I'll give it to you play by play.
Okay, three goats. Joe Goat standing by.
Right. Now listen, here's what I'm going to do. The only way to convince those guys down there is to come in with autograph pictures of mules. So I'm going to dive on that patch and jazz the motors all out about 800 yards. Just at the end of the dive, I'm going to cut the motor for a couple of seconds so I can hear. Because if there are mules down there, and if I don't see them on the first pass, I'll sure enough hear them. And all the time, old Big Eye's going to be making pretty pictures. Okay, here I go.
Are you all right? Three goats. Three goats. Three goats.
Yeah, I'm with you, son. I'm with you. I'm just picking some palm leaves out of my teeth and heading for home. Say, did those mules come over at all?
Yes, sir, but I also got something that sound like ack-ack.
Yeah? I forgot to tell you, son. Those mules have got kinfolk who've been educated to shoot.
Really did get them. Look at that.
Beauties, aren't they, sir? It makes me feel right homesick.
Here comes the reception committee. Don't say a word.
Any luck? What'd you find?
Any luck, Pop?
Hi, fellas.
More, jungle pictures, Pop?
Maybe he's trying to start a real estate development for after the war, huh?
Yeah, Polifka invites you to live in Swampy Gardens, a mule's paradise.
Now, why don't you guys lay off of me? I'm just trying to do my part in the war effort.
Oh, that boy, Pop.
Good for you.
No kidding, Pop. Did you get anything?
Well,
come on. Give us a look.
Well, honest, I can't. I told the old man I'd show him to him right away. I was just going in to see him now.
Well, mind if we come along?
Oh, look, fellas, why don't you wait?
And miss this?
You've had your fun, Pop.
Be a sport, pal.
Okay, okay.
Oh, and that reminds me. What about that dough?
No, I guess you don't need to worry about that dough anymore. Come on.
Come in.
Major Polifka reporting, sir, with guard of honor.
So I see. Come in, gentlemen, come in.
Thank you, sir.
I'd heard a rumor that certain parties had an interest in your exploits, other than of a purely military nature. Well, Major Polifka, at any rate, let me congratulate you on your return.
Thank you, sir.
And let me add that in thinking the matter over, I've decided I can't possibly afford to risk personnel and equipment on any more such adventures in the future. That is an order, Major.
Yes, sir. I guess you won't have to anyway, sir.
Well, I'm glad you see it that way. Oh, more pictures, eh?
Yes, sir.
Anything of interest?
Well, I think you might be interested in them, sir, just for the record. Here they are, sir.
Thank you. Oh, yeah. Yeah?
Great Scott, Palifka!
What goes?
Well, I'll be...
Mules!
Why, there must be 100 of them.
Mules.
Scampering all over the landscape.
It is a pretty big corral, sir.
How did you ever catch them in the open like this? There hasn't been the slightest sign in all our weeks of reconnaissance.
Flying flusy must have given them a bad dose of jitters. And they just went to town. I figure the Japs used them at night and kept them in these camouflage corrals during the day.
They're mules, all right. Heaven only knows where they got them. Gentlemen, do you realize that this is the answer to all our troubles?
Yes, it looks that way to me, sir.
Once we've scattered these mules, we'll have the Japs right where we want them. That was a nice bit of a recon, Major.
Thank you, sir. Well, guard of honor.
Pop, all I can say is I got to hand it to you. Congratulations.
Well, now, we'll want a bombing expedition against those corrals immediately. You'll follow up for pictures, Major.
Right, sir.
You know the terrain pretty well by now. Are there any special arrangements you might like to suggest?
Why, yes, sir. There's one thing.
All right, let's hear it.
I'd like to nominate the pilots for this mule skinning expedition, if that's okay, sir.
Oh, well, that's possible. Who are your men?
Well, Doc here's flight surgeon, so he's out. But Fred and Harry, they're definitely in.
Just try to keep us out.
Right.
Hey, but wait a minute. You're a bit too anxious.
Yeah, what's the gag?
Gag? Why, gentlemen, would I stoop to such a thing? I just figure if you don't go, you'll be cheated. Because you're sure paid in advance for this ride.
Our thanks to Warren William. And to Pop, now Lieutenant Colonel Polifka, happy landings and good pictures wherever you may be.
The Cavalcade of America on Tuned to Yesterday, an NBC Red broadcast from August 16th, 1943, bringing to a close this hour of true history on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVanier. Thanks for tuning in.